But first today, there's rarely a day that goes by that I don't wonder at new technology and ask myself, how do we get along without it? From the mobile phone to the internet and everything in between, it makes life a lot easier and we get things done a lot faster. But this new technology can also have its negatives. One of the more serious downsides can be seen in the area of the law, where jurors have been playing amateur sleuths and Googling information about defendants in criminal trials or about the crime scene. Overseas jurors have been jailed for using the internet instead of relying solely on the evidence put before them in the case and the instructions from the judges. It's also happened in Australian courts, but so far no action has been taken against the jurors involved. So what's the solution? Can you prevent jurors reaching for their electronic device instead of asking questions in court? Dr. Jacqueline Horan is a senior lecturer in law at the University of Melbourne, and she joins us now. Jackie Horan, welcome to Counterpoint.
Hello, Amanda.
Well, their fingers must be burning to get to their phones, don't you think, in a jury?
It's so instinctive for the younger group of jurors, which are now becoming the majority of jurors, to go onto Google and to do the best job that they can in the way that they know how to.
Sure. I mean, when juries first started, a lot of people would have been, illiterate in their own language, wouldn't they?
And that's the thing, that there hasn't been much change to the processes since over 100 years ago, where jurors didn't necessarily read or write well. So it made sense that all the instructions that they were given verbally by the judge. We still do it that way, though. We haven't
changed.
And we do know that jurors are highly educated and they can read and write, and they're used to getting information in different forms, not just verbally, but in written work, in visually.
And they're not used to being disconnected from their phones.
No, they're not. From the day they started school, they've been investigators. That's what they teach them at school these days, to go out and ask their fellow students, ask the internet, and then ask their teacher. They don't sit and listen like we may have done back 40 years ago, where we listened to what the teacher said. And that's exactly what they get in the courtroom. They get words, words, and more words, and they don't like it.
Spoken at. Well, nobody. Look, I try and help some people with speeches, and the first thing to explain to them is people don't like being spoken at. You have to include them in your speech, engage them, otherwise they're going to nod off. So talking at people through a whole trial where they're just being spoken at the whole time would be a bit frustrating. But now, look, you've got some examples in the United States where people who understand social media have in fact used it, possibly with the intention of affecting the outcome of a jury decision.
Yeah, there are all sorts of ramifications at the other side of the... it's not just the juries that are getting more tech savvy, it's also the defendants who will go online and try and defend themselves and tell their stories before the trial. Problem with that is that that's available for everyone, including the jurors, who may come across it accidentally when they're on the internet. And to be able to have a fair trial, the basics of what we say today is that the jurors shouldn't have any information relevant to that trial in their heads before they go and deliberate.
Sure. So what are the examples of people who've done that?
So Michael Jackson was the first person that tried it, but even more so was his doctor more recently, who was up on the charge of providing him with illicit drugs that led to his untimely death. And he put a YouTube video that you can still see on YouTube where he actually thanks all his supporters, but then in the end explains himself before the trial. And that is something that has the potential to influence jurors if this case went to trial. Martha Stewart was another master of the internet in her insider trading trial. She had 6 million visitors to her website, and she court documents, and she put up 80,000 emails of support. So it's happening. We haven't had examples of that yet in Australia, but it's just a matter of time. We did have grave concerns in one case where a Facebook site, which was originally set up to support the victim of a murder, slowly turned out to be a place where the friends of the victim started abusing the defendant before the trial. Mm-hmm. And that becomes problematic too, because that is also
it
available
can work
for
both
potential
ways.
Jurors.
Sure.
So,
the principle is go in with when I say an empty mind, a clean slate, and not have your mind tainted either in favour or against the defendant in the case.
That's right.
Mm.
And
okay, well, can I ask you about an example? I'm told in what was, at some point may still be, the largest terrorism trial in Victoria, there in fact was an example where it was clear that someone on the jury had accessed the internet.
Yes, in the Ben Bricker trial, which was that joint trial that was run between New South Wales and Melbourne, where the group of alleged the defendants were involved in plotting terrorist acts, there were two applications to discharge the jury on the basis of having conducted their own research. And this was despite being explicitly told by Justice Bongiorno not to use the internet. And he told them three times. But despite this, Wikipedia-type internet printouts were found in the jury room rubbish bin. Now, the judge held that there was nothing prejudicial in the printouts, so it wasn't like they printed out prior convictions or something like that. It was actually them trying to come to grips with some basic definitions about what the case was about. He talked to the jury and confirmed that they'd still be able to determine the case impartially, and on that basis he didn't discharge the jury at great cost to the community. And again, during deliberations, a little bit later, it was revealed that there was a dictionary in the jury room and they were looking up a key word that was used in the charge. There was new terrorism legislation and they wanted to understand what was going on. And that's the bottom line. Jurors want to do a great job and they want to do it in the way they know how. Now, Justice Bongiorno and the Court of Appeal, because it went up to appeal, held that whilst the use of the dictionary may have been inappropriate, it hadn't compromised the trial.
You're on Counterpoint and I'm talking to Jackie Horan, Senior Lecturer in Law at Melbourne University, about jurors accessing their mobile devices. Well you've done, you've got access to information anyway about a 2012 study asking nearly 300 jurors about how they felt about asking a question, because as you say, they want to do the right thing. They've got some doubt in their mind about the meaning of a word or the meaning of what the judge has said or whatever. It doesn't matter. They've got questions. What can you tell us about how they feel about using their right, I might say their obligation, to ask those questions?
In 2011-12, I was lucky enough to be able to survey and then interview jurors about what they thought about expert evidence in criminal jury trials that they sat on. And what we asked them was, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask the experts? And a quarter of the 300 jurors that we surveyed said that they wanted to ask questions, but well over 90% of those questions weren't asked. So the follow-up question was, well, why didn't you ask them? Mm-hmm. And there were two main reasons. The first reason was the jurors said, I didn't know jurors could ask questions. And the second reason was, I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't think they'd be allowed, so I didn't ask them. So they're feeling uncomfortable in the courtroom. Jurors can ask questions, and the judge actually tells them that right at the start of the trial when he's giving his or her initial and jury explanations about what their job is and how they go about doing it. But what we're finding is that that message isn't getting through to some of the jurors. And even if it is getting through, they're still feeling very nervous about asking it in the courtroom, which is an intimidating environment for people that don't
work
there.
For many people.
Yeah.
Look, I understand. I know people have appeared in court on what I would regard as relatively simple matters and have felt quite alone in an uncertain environment. They felt someone should have gone with them. When they were simply there to, you know, give a short little bit of evidence, they were worried that something nasty would happen. And equally, I know a couple of people who've been on juries who said surprising things to me, like, you know, I saw those two lawyers talking as if they were friends. And I think something was going on there. They weren't really opposed to each other. Not just clearly not understanding that the lawyers are there to do their job. They might, outside the court, be neighbours. So there is a lot of explaining to do. Now, I know in Victoria there is a jury directions advisory group. There may be one in each state. Clearly there ought to be. But that's got some developments coming up, hasn't it?
Yeah, in July there'll be a pilot program that the Supreme and County Court of Victoria are conducting, where they're going to introduce written jury directions, which will complement what the judge says at the start to the jury so that they can take home these written directions. And one of the directions is how you go about asking questions so that they'll be clear on that. And the other direction in the written document is the fact that they're not allowed to go on the internet and they're not allowed to ask people. And the good thing is that they're going to have an explanation as to why. That and educated jurors will relate a lot more and understand why it is they shouldn't be doing something that's so instinctive to them if they're told, actually, well, you'll let down your fellow jurors. You may be committing a criminal offence. In Queensland, New South Wales, you have the potential to go to jail for it. The trial may need to be stopped and a new trial started. That would cost the community a significant amount of money. And it would also be very stressful for the witnesses to have to go through the whole process again.
Mm. Look, I think it's terrific that you're engaged in this area. It's one of the linchpins, if you like, of our criminal justice system, that you're entitled to a trial by jury if that's what you choose. And the fact that we haven't moved on from the days when most or many people didn't read and write, and we're still treating juries in that way and not understanding how much things have changed. And not just that the technology is available, the mental approach of individuals has changed, as you say, to be researchers, to go and hunt for information. So you're in fact doing research at a really very, very important part of the legal system that gets overlooked. So it's been a great pleasure talking
Thank
to you.
You.
Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure.
Thanks. That was Jackie Horan, Senior Lecturer in Law at the University of Melbourne, talking about jurors accessing the internet.